Production support for Earth Eats comes from Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at GriffeyCreek.studio. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. From WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, I'm Kate Young. This is Earth Eats.
It's going to be a juicy, kind of hazy, East Coast style IPA, which is very popular right now.
Today's show is a look back to a story about beer making with fresh, green, locally grown hops. We check out the hops farm, too. And we've got a cool dessert recipe made with coffee liqueur. That's all just ahead, so stay with us. Hi, Alex. What have you got for news this week?
Hey, Kate. We've been inundated with stories about flooding in farm country lately. A couple of those include a meeting of Midwestern governors who are trying to prevent future flooding, and a debate among Congress and the USDA about how to help out farmers who've lost their grain due to flooded storage bins. The governors of Iowa, Nebraska, and Missouri met with the Army Corps of Engineers last week to talk about preventing future flooding along the Missouri River. The governors, all Republicans, agreed that the river needs to be managed differently. Governor Pete Ricketts of Nebraska says they've asked the Corps to communicate with them about future solutions.
This is something where we think as states we need to be more actively involved with regard to how we're managing the Missouri River to avoid this sort of flooding going forward in the future. All of us believe that we ought to be prioritizing people and communities to be able to make sure we're keeping them safe.
The Army Corps of Engineers has been criticized for the way it manages the river, including making the southwest Iowa town of Hamburg lower a levee in 2011. The recent flooding has caused billions of dollars in damage, especially to agriculture in the three states plus Kansas. Kansas Governor Laura Kelly was scheduled to join the others but ran into travel issues. She will be part of the conversations going forward. Last month, in the flooding after the bomb cyclone, millions of tons of corn and soybeans spilled into flooded fields. That means the farmers who were storing all the grain won't be able to sell it. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue said earlier this week the USDA would consider giving those farmers emergency aid. Currently, there's no mechanism for helping farmers out with crops flooded while in storage. House Agriculture Chairman Colin Peterson said farmers are expected to buy their own insurance for that. But a combination of factors has made this a bigger disaster than ever before. Typically, farmers have warnings about rising waters. That gives them time to move their grain to higher ground. Last month, the rapid snowmelt caused levees to fail, and the frozen ground couldn't soak up the water. And farmers had more in storage than ever before. As of March 1st, the amount of corn in storage was at its third highest, and soybeans were at a record. That's because of years of oversupplied markets and low prices, plus lost sales to China, U.S. farmers' biggest market for soybeans. Usually, insurance policies cover grain bins and equipment to move grain, but not the grain itself. The USDA said none of its disaster programs cover stored grain either. Congress is considering a one-time appropriation of $3 billion for farmers affected by flooding in the Midwest and tornadoes in the South. With another storm this week and the climate changing, there was no discussion of how to compensate farmers for future disasters. And that's the news, thanks to Harvest Public Media for their story.
And thank you, Alex Chambers.
Sure thing, Kate.
We almost always include at least one recipe on every episode of Earth Eats. A favorite one from last year was Chef D's Coffee Orange Granita. It's an iced dessert, and this warmer weather might have you in the mood for something cool. Let's let Chef Daniel Orr tell us how it's done.
We're going to take 2 cups of coffee, We're going to take a half cup of sugar, and we're going to stir that in. Okay, you want to use hot coffee, and then that's going to dissolve the sugar and make a syrup. We're going to kick up that flavor a little bit. I'm going to add some orange zest. Now, when you use orange zest, you want to use organic oranges because most oranges have been sprayed. And so if you're going to use the exterior, you really want to pick organic. And we're just going to grate that. And you can really smell those essential oils coming out of the orange. And then we're going to juice the orange. So just cut it in half. And we're just going to squeeze that orange right into our coffee mixture. Little stir. Now the sugar and the alcohol are what's going to keep this from getting super, super ice cube solid. So the alcohol we're using is Kahlua, which is a Mexican coffee liqueur. We're going to add about an ounce and a half of that. Then you just put this in the freezer. Go back to it after about an hour and a half, 2 hours. You can start to shave it and then let it sit overnight. And then the next day you're going to have your granite. And I've pulled this out of the freezer a little bit ahead of time so it would soften up a little bit, but you can see how that shaves like a nice Italian shaved ice. I'm gonna grab a dish. It's best to have your dish either frozen or refrigerated so it doesn't melt as soon as you put it into your bowl. And we're just going to dish this out into one of grandma's old bowls. A little bit of whipped cream on top, and we're gonna garnish it with a couple coffee beans and a little piece of orange. And so that is our coffee granite with Kahlua and citrus.
Yeah, that's really nice. I love how you can taste that zest just a little bit.
Yeah, it has a nice balance to it.
You can taste the zest and the balance for yourself. This is an easy one. We have the recipe and even a video this time showing all the steps and the finished product. You can't go wrong. Just go to eartheats.org to get started. Remember that we love to hear from you. Send us an email, tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear more of, eartheats@gmail.com. Or leave us a review on your favorite podcast listening place. Yeah, wherever you hear us, we'd love to hear from you. Interesting recipes. That's one of the things listeners like you have come to expect from Earth Eats. Recipes from professional chefs like Chef D of Farm Bloomington Restaurant or Arlen Llewellyn of Function Brewing, but also from home cooks and meal preppers like Susan Mintert or Jackie B. Howard. We even had Eric Shedler of Muddy Fork Bakery on the show recently, teaching us how to make pita bread from freshly ground spelt flour. If you appreciate what you hear on Earth Eats, make a pledge to let us know. Go to wfiu.org/donate. We've got a lot of fun thank you gifts to choose from, but we hope the biggest thank you is the excellent programming you listen to day after day, week after week, right here on WFIU. Again, go to wfiu.org/donate. And thank you.
It's going to be a juicy, kind of hazy, East Coast style IPA, which is very popular right now.
He's talking about beer. Did you know beer could be juicy? Hazy, I can sort of picture, but juicy? That's a new one for me. I'm no beer connoisseur. I know almost nothing about beer. I mean, I'll enjoy a pint now and then, and I'm partial to craft beers, but my taste buds are not at all refined in this area. As far as how beer is made, I'm pretty ignorant there too. I know fermentation is involved, and hops, but what are hops, really? A grain? I don't know. I'm not sure. But when my friends at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard told me they were partnering with Upland Brewing for a special 20th anniversary signature beer, I was intrigued.
Most beers are made with dry hops.
This is Matthew Batty, creative director with Upland Brewing.
But this one's wet hops, which means fresh off the vine. And it's a hazy IPA, and this one's going to be called Mother's Harvest because it's a partnership with Mother Hubbard's Cupboard in Bloomington. Because we have a shared birthday. We were both 20 years old, starting in 1998. And we're helping them with their gala in September, which should be a really fun event. I think we're going to do a hog roast and help them raise some money and also share this beer once it's brewed with them.
Okay, I'm in. A cause I believe in, an unusual process, tell me more. They said I could go out to the hops farm for the harvest and then follow him back to the brew house for a lesson in beer making. I said yes to that. First thing I notice is that hop plants are referred to as bines. Yeah, that's B as in boy, not V as in Victor. The farm I visited is called Indy High Bines. It's up near Indianapolis, and the bines are indeed very high. Each plant climbs up a rope strung on a substantial trellising system. They reach up to 25 feet, maybe higher, row after row of these high bines, loaded with hops cones. The bines themselves are not terribly leafy or lush. They're kind of thin, really. And the flowers are the part you harvest. They remind me of a small, loose, papery pine cone, and they're pale green.
This is a first-year crop, so it's not as thick as our second-year crop. It is a perennial crop, so it comes back every year. Assuming the health of the plant's good, it'll always make it through the winter and come back the next year.
But you can harvest the first year?
You know, if your plants are big enough, yes, you can. If your plants, you know, maybe struggle through the first year, you really might not want to, just to let them build up more root system, more reserves in the plant. But we've had good success getting good yields on our first crop, so we harvest them. We try to leave a good amount of plant at the bottom that'll grow up and bush out through the fall.
That's Ryan Gettem, one of the owners and growers at Indy High Bines. This is their fourth year growing hops in this field. To harvest them, one crew goes along the base of the bines and clips them, the whole plant and the rope they're climbing on. They use a pair of handheld clippers. Then a couple of people climb up on a crude wooden structure, a tower, pulled by a tractor in between the bines.
And then we have up in the tower, we cut the tops, and then someone down low guides it into the trailer as we cut the tops off and drop them in the trailer. And we pretty much try to load the trailer as full as we can and get as much as we can get really up to the machine, and then we'll run the machine.
The day I was out there, they were just getting what Upland needed for their special harvest brew. And a crew from Upland was out there helping. It went pretty fast.
Belt above that belt, and they'll all fall onto that belt. So basically everything that gets stripped off the plant goes to a belt, and it all falls and goes down in front of this mesh belt. And what you'll see happen is all the leaves will stick to the mesh belt, all the cones will continue down. And then there's a bottom belt in there that collects all the cones, and it brings them up, and then it dumps them over these dribble belts, and the cones will go down to the bottom of the dribble belt. You'll be pretty amazed what comes out the other side. This was made in Germany in 1982 specifically for hops.
Rachel is with the Upland crew, and she's learning how to load the bines onto the machine.
We're basically trying to find the end, push all the green stuff away, and then once it loads it in, it'll use the rope and the root or the vine to pull it up. And then they'll start to strip the like leaves and branches off of it. And it's mostly just like hooking it. It's hooking the bind to carry it into the top.
And that's when Charlie, one of the brewers at Upland, told me what the beer would be like.
It's going to be a juicy, kind of hazy, East Coast style IPA, which is very popular right now.
What do you mean when you say juicy?
Juice characteristics. It's not like a very effervescent, very high-carb beer like you're used to drinking with a Pilsner or a lager. It's going to be, it doesn't have pulp or anything like that, but just the mouthfeel of the beer is more like drinking orange juice versus a champagne or very light, high-carb beer.
I still didn't know what he meant. I guess I'd just have to wait till I could taste the beer for myself. For now, I'll just focus on the hops. Those pretty pale green cones that are quickly filling up the mesh bin at the end of the final conveyor belt of the machine. It's a pretty cool morning with patchy clouds shielding us from the August sun, and the aroma of hops is thick all around us.
Wow, they smell great.
Yeah, they do. Very piney. Very citrus and pine, like grapefruit and pine almost.
And as we're standing over the final conveyor belt, picking out any stray leaves, I ask Ryan when the hops usually come up in the spring.
Usually pretty early around here. So usually by the 1st of March, we're starting to see them emerge. And then we actually continually prune them to the ground. As they grow up, we prune them, they grow up, and we prune them. And that's so we can get our timing on the string right. We want them to start climbing at a certain point in the year.
Oh.
And we start early here because it gets warmer here. So we have to prune them back a couple times usually before we actually let them climb. So they maximize the daylight through the summer, and that'll help maximize the yield. It'll help maximize the oils that they develop in the cone. So timing's pretty critical in the spring.
The machine's running mostly on its own at this point. The crew is pretty laid back, beers in hand, laughing, joking, guiding binds onto hooks, picking leaves off of belts. They'll be heading back to Bloomington with their fresh batch of hops in no time. After a quick break, we'll visit Upland's Brew House in Bloomington for the next stage in the wet hopped brewing process. Production support comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeigner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee shop committed to sustainable practices and organic, ethically sourced coffee from small-scale farmers. Featuring handmade quiche, scones, and baked goods. Located on Pete Ellis Drive. Needmoreroasters.com. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent providing customized financial services for individuals, businesses, and disabled adults, including tax planning, bill paying, and estate services. More at personalfinancialservices.net. I showed up at the brew house on the west side of Bloomington at 9 a.m. the next morning.
The brew house is back here.
Zach Allgood was way ahead of me.
I came in and got started about 6 o'clock this morning.
Zach led me through the packaging room, then the cellar, and into the brewing room. It's a warehouse-type space with high ceilings filled with stainless steel tanks and machinery. There's a metal grate catwalk leading up to the tops of 3 of the tanks. Zach moves up and down those stairs, checking gauges, watching temperatures, pulling samples. He's got a beer stein style mug filled with hot tea that's never out of reach.
There's barley, wheat, some spelt malt. Those are the grains in this beer. When the grains come in contact with hot water, there's some enzymatic activity that basically turns the starches into simple sugars. And then we take those sugars, and that's what we're going to make the beer with.
Zach was kind enough to walk me through the general steps of brewing.
We have a 3-vessel brewing system with our mash tun, our boil kettle, and our whirlpool. This tank here is our cold liquor tank. This one right next to it is our hot liquor tank. And so that's our brewing water. The cold water is used to help cool the beer. After we get done in the whirlpool, we'll let it settle. We'll spin that beer around, and basically we're letting centrifugal force help pull all the solids into the middle. The idea is just to get a really clean wort, so when we're ready to start transferring into the fermenters, we'll come through this as a heat exchanger, and so we're chilling it as fast as possible. So it'll come in this side at about 200-ish degrees, and it'll come out the other side about 20 degrees Celsius is what it'll come out today. So at that point, it comes out into the cellar, where it will go into our fermenters.
We moved into the cellar room for the rest of the steps.
Depending on the batch size, we'll go into different size fermenters. So on the way to the fermenter, we will pitch yeast. We'll pitch it in line as it's going to the fermenter. And then it'll start working. It'll start fermenting. And usually in 7 to 10 days, fermentation will be pretty close to finished up.
What about this wet hop type?
This one probably 5 or 6 days, it'll be pretty close to finished up. They go pretty quickly. After that, we'll send most of our beers, we'll go through our centrifuge to clarify it. And so we can start pulling beer from the center. This will be a New England style hazy beer, so it won't go through the centrifuge. We'll go from the racking arm straight over into our bright tank. And then the bright beer tanks is where we carbonate the beer. So there's a large carbonation stone, similar to a fish tank aerator, that are in the side of there, and we'll push CO2 into the beer.
So that's your basic process for making beer. But this beer is special. it has something else.
This is for our wet hop harvest ale with Mother Hubbard's cupboard. This big vessel here is called the hop back, and you put the hops in there, and then after the boil, we will run the hot wort through those hops, and then it'll go into the whirlpool. So you're extracting a lot of hop aroma and flavor, but very little bitterness because you're at a much cooler temperature. So it's not a very bitter beer, but it's a very hoppy beer.
And those hops are green and fresh. They're the ones I just watched them harvest the day before out at Indy High Bines. They brought them in from the cooler and dumped them into the hop vac that Zach was talking about. I could smell them as soon as they entered the room.
Peel them apart for you whenever you were up there. And so on the inside, there's all this powder. Looks like pollen.
Yeah.
That's lupulin, and that's kind of the thing that we're after.
What's it called again?
Lupulin. Yeah.
I did take one in the car with me, and I just crushed it up and smelled it.
Yeah, these are really nice. These are Chinook hops. Good stuff.
I found out that hops are in the same family as cannabis, and you'd believe it if you smelled these fresh hops. Hanging out at the brew house that morning, I was really struck with how technical the whole process is. You really gotta geek out to be a brewer. There are so many variables, so many details, times, temperatures, rates of transfer from one vessel to the next.
13.0 plus point.
Zach kept taking samples of the wort, testing for sugar levels.
Typically our 1200 sample, our target gravity and our 1200 sample will be basically the same number. If that's the case, we know we'll add about another 200 gallons of wort to the kettle and we'll be in the ballpark.
I was sufficiently impressed. The moment when the wort started to run through the bin of fresh hops, it was pretty exciting. I could tell this wasn't an everyday thing for the brewers. At this point, Zach is working with another brewer, Matt Wisely. Matt was down with the hops while Zach opened the kettle valve up on the catwalk. The scent of the hops came on strong with the steam, but it also changed once the hot liquid hit.
How would you describe that aroma?
Hoppy. So hops have a lot of the same aroma compounds that are in all sorts of different plants, just in different combinations. And so these are very piney and kind of citrusy. And the flavor and aroma changes depending upon what stage you use the hops in the beer. So if you infuse a certain flavor into the hot wort and then it goes through a fermentation, the yeast transform a lot of those flavors into different sorts of flavors. So you never know really what you're going to get out of a specific hop until you use it in a beer.
But using these fresh like this is different. You're pulling out different flavors.
Yeah, you're getting something different. There's debate upon whether it's better or worse, but it's not the same, because the technology that they use to make dried and pelletized hops now just gives you a really nice product that's very efficient in extracting all the good stuff out of there. So almost everybody's using pelletized hops. It's just an easier form, and you get more out of them. This is definitely much harder to work with, but these are as fresh as you can possibly get, really, less than 24 hours from being harvested off the vine.
As they stirred the mixture with the long-handled paddles, steam rising from the vat, the hops went from brilliant green to a dull, sandy color. I started to get really curious about what this beer was going to taste like.
Well, that's pretty much it for that. It's going to be transferring in there for like 45 minutes, and then everything else is kind of behind closed doors, if you will. There's not much else to see. It's all in the tank.
So you stirred it in there for a few minutes, but it's basically running out now.
Yeah, it's moving into the whirlpool tank where it'll spin it around to separate the solids from the liquid, and then we can send it off through the chiller and into the cellar.
So that's it. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
The name of this special wet-hopped beer is Mother's Harvest, in honor of Mother Hubbard's cupboard and their shared 20th birthday. I finally got to sample the beer at a Dine and Donate event out at Upland's 11th Street location. When I ordered it, our server wanted to tell me about the hop farm and the special process. I let him talk, but I was certain I knew more about this beer than he did. When the beer arrived, I noticed it lived up to Charlie's hazy description. It was served in the smaller tulip-style glass rather than a pint tumbler, and it was pretty cloudy. I took a sip. First impression, super hoppy. It tasted just like those fresh hops smelled. A few sips in, and I got it. I got what he meant when he said juicy. The mouthfeel. It really felt like I was drinking juice. Grapefruit juice, in fact. Fruity, citrusy, with a hint of bitter, like grapefruit is bitter. And yes, it was drinkable. A little too drinkable, perhaps. I felt like I could easily enjoy a few of these without even noticing. I'm still no connoisseur. Not by any means. But I tasted it. I tasted the juiciness and I tasted the hops. Knowing a little of the story behind the beer, visiting the farm, witnessing the process, it changed how I tasted the finished product. Makes sense, I guess. The whole know your farmer, getting connected to where your food comes from. It applies to beer, too. To see some photos from Indie High Bines and Uplands Brewhouse, check out our website, eartheats.org. I know this sounds weird, but I kind of like public radio fun drives. I like them because it's a chance to hear from you, our listeners. You listen to us week after week on your radio, streaming, or podcasts, but so rarely do we get to hear from you. If you like what you hear on WFIU, if you like listening to Earth Eats in particular, you can let us know directly by pledging your support for this station. Just go to wfiu.org/donate. Let us know what you listen to, why you listen, your favorite programs. It's a chance for you to let us know what matters most to you and what it's worth to you. wfiu.org/donate. Thank you. That's it for our show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone on the Earth Eats crew, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Renee Reed, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Ryan and everyone out at Indie High Bines, and thanks also to Matthew, Charlie, Rachel, Zach, Matt, and everyone at Upland Brewing. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Production support comes from Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at griffeycreek.studio. Charles Schwab and Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee shop dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers, offering teas and signature drinks like the Hilltopper. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com.